Yes.
Okay, we're recording audio now.
Alright.
And of course, there's no audio. Maybe, Walter, we should just go ahead and get started.
Okay, if Mike joins us, he can, or if he doesn't, we'll send him the audio. Good morning and welcome. We promised you in last week's teleconference a little more detailed overview, not only of our infrastructure, but I hope also of our QA process that has motivated its development. And we want to start with a little bit of with an acknowledgement first that the ATC is a team effort that has evolved over 14 years now. There a number of the names are here. There are others that have contributed in the past, but these are the ones who are currently actively involved at the NCI and at the four centers that comprise the ATC. If at any point Dr. Purdy or Joe or other ATC folks chime in, please, or if there are questions, don't hesitate to ask them. We'll try to address them as we go.
And Walter, on the WebEx, I mean, do we need to start about raising your hand and such? I mean, I really want the ACIP people to interrupt us if
please.
There's questions.
I think on the phone. We'll be listening on the phone. I think we'll try to capture
just chime in on the phone if you have any questions.
Questions get recorded in the recording as well. So
okay.
We're going to want to start with a perspective of the ATC as supporting the collection and QA and credentialing for U.S. cooperative group trials involved in advanced technology radiotherapy clinical trials. And the ATC has provided these groups an ability to submit case data that involve images as well as volumetric treatment planning data to either the ITC or QARC, and to go through a QA process and then become part of an outcomes analysis effort. We're going to focus, while this is a large effort, there is more than one process and more than one infrastructure indicated here. There's QUASAR on the ITC side that supports the cooperative groups shown on the left, and a MAX infrastructure developed by QARC to support the clinical trials, primarily children's and CALGB and ACOSOG. And while we don't expect those to be merged into a single infrastructure, the goal ultimately, we'll discuss that, is that there be links made that are more and more transparent, that allow data to be moved transparently among the cooperative groups served by the ATC, that there not be barriers to the appropriate transfer of those data. Also indicated here in the middle is the RPC, whose major responsibility is credentialing and physical QA. As I said, our emphasis today will be primarily on the left side of this diagram on QUASAR, and under that heading, now more than 600 institutions are able to submit data, volumetric treatment planning and imaging data to the ITC. There are 15 closed protocols. Actually, it's probably one more than that, because they're opening and closing since this slide was put together, but about 21 active protocols. And we have worked with commercial treatment planning vendors. There are about 20 commercial treatment planning systems now that we have deemed ATC compliant in their ability to submit data for clinical trials. The ATC QUASAR, Quality Assurance Submission Archive Analysis and Review System, has been developed in response to a need. It wasn't developed in a vacuum. Experience in supporting collection of volumetric treatment planning data early on from the 3DOG trial about that started in the early 90s directed our efforts in investing in the interfaces. And early on, it was the RTOG data exchange format, and then very soon we became involved, and most of you know this, in the development of the RT objects in the DICOM standard. We've also invested heavily in supporting treatment planning vendor data export efforts, and we've had several workshops that have been sponsored at ITC, and we continue to have, there's ongoing effort to support one-on-one vendors' development as well as the testing and ATC compliance testing for those systems. As I mentioned before, it's built to support a real-world QA process. We'll look at a little bit what that means. We've maintained continuous support. We now have over 8,000 protocol case data sets and several thousand more credentialing data sets that we've collected. And we've been able to, in addition to supporting the QA process for those, one of the benefits of having a single repository for all of those data is that we've enabled the creation of a large archive of treatment planning data that's volumetric, as volumetric dosimetry, that's linked to clinical outcomes, so that there are records of eligibility follow-up, clinical status for those cases in the cooperative group statistical databases.
Right, we expect this data to be mined as time goes on by various investigators.
Right, and that's one of the investigators who's speaking right now, because there've been several efforts already to date that have made use of that, and hopefully there will be many more. This is a little simpler version. This is of the diagram that you received in the handout last week, and I'll go over it very briefly, but the major thrust here, and ask questions if it's not clear, is that we have worked with vendors to develop export in either RTOG DICOM at the left side of this diagram. We have used secure FTP generic transport mechanisms, so a secure FTP client or CD media for transport of the data to the ITC. We receive those data and import them into a treatment planning system file system, which is which we based on the CMS Exio format. On top of that, near the top of the center of the diagram, we've built a number of tools that allow us to judge the completeness and consistency of those data. So those are referred to as data integrity QA tools. And we have a graphical interface that allows the data managers at the ITC to process data and respond to institutions to request amended submissions. Once those data in the middle in that treatment planning system, those treatment planning system files, are judged to be ready, that is, they've gone through a data integrity QA process, they are made available primarily by volume, at least, on using a web-based remote review tool. And we'll look at some views of that tool that allows axial displays of images, structures, doses, dose contours, as well as DBH statistics. We have also used the CMS Focal product as our beginning effort in multimodality registration and review. We've exported, we have a looking to the right end of that, the inner box, the RTOG data exchange export. We have developed a mechanism to allow export of those data in RTOG data exchange format. We've done that for in bulk for secondary analysis, both to MD Anderson and to WashU here, to Joe Deasy's group. And then based on that export, on top of that export, we're now using SIR primarily, in this diagram, primarily for format conversion to the
as part of our involvement in a National Cancer Imaging Archive project involving one of the head and neck trials, RTOG 0522, where we convert the RTOG data exchange export into DICOM RT files and into SIR for SIR format. We'll look at that in just a second. So that's
another. Staying with that for 1 minute, Walter, that yes. is a combined protocol between RTOG and Akron,
yes.
with Akron supplying PET CT studies for a few hundred patients within that phase 3 trial, and that NCIA database is a public database then meant to be a resource to researchers and vendors alike. So it will be a combined imaging data along with RT data that can be used to validate other software tools, for example.
Yeah,
exactly. So the vendors, they want to be aware of the NCIA.
That's right. And so we've taken care of the RT side, so we've gotten data in multiple formats. We have a common stream of QA data, of RT data, that then can be correlated with changes in pre- and post-treatment PET scans. And so that's a very exciting project. Were there any other questions on the general architecture, general approach that diagram represents? Go ahead.
Walter, this is Virgil. I just have one question. You said, so if the vendors wanted to access into the database, is the primary way that we would do that via that NCIA box?
Right.
That's one way, Walter. That's one way right now, and we need to be clear. I don't think the NCIA has been made totally public. I still believe that that's the goal of that, but I believe this data set is still somewhat restricted.
Well, it's funded by the Cancer Imaging Program across the hall from us and Carl Jaffe's group. You raise a good point, Jim. I mean, I think it is...
The goal is...
I think it is public. It's just that it's not user-friendly at this point.
Yeah.
So I think if vendors are interested, they certainly ought to get in touch with, I guess, me, and I'll put you in touch with the right folks over in the Cancer Imaging Program. But ultimately, all that data will be available. You can go. I mean, it's web linked now. You can go out there and examine the images and a lot of the data that are there already, because Carl Jaffe has publicized that fact. Anyway, if you're interested, email me and I'll send your email over to the cancer imaging folks and they'll get back to you.
And what's your email?
Just DEYEJ@mail.nih.gov.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
We can make sure all the ACIP members get key emails. That's something probably we should do. And so we'll send an email out with Jim's email on it and other key people just to make sure everybody's up to date.
But there is no, if I understand this correctly, there's no sort of web-based user interface by which people could go in and access look through anonymized data?
Yes, there is. There is a web interface that allows you to search for a number of collections, and there are, depending on your account, you can search some lung screening trials, and there are a number of different imaging studies. This is the first in terms of therapy. So there are DICOM RT objects and PET objects that can be retrieved, and you select the case that you want, and it'll download it to you. It'll zip it and download it to your computer. So it's a web. It is.
Well, Walter, I may be following up with you on that one.
Sure. I think the question is really one of getting you an account and making sure that that's that you have access to that collection.
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay, thanks.
And it's still in construction. I mean, to be realistic, it's not complete, but there are 20, 30 something cases in the collection at this point. So it's
okay.
It's
I think it'll become as vendors show interest. I think that will raise its visibility within the NCI and hustle things along.
Oh, yeah.
So you said there was like 30 cases in there, but you said there was over some like 8,000 cases that had been submitted. So
these are different.
How come
this is a test. This is a pilot project in acquiring and anonymizing a particular case.
These are two different archives we're talking about now. Right. So there's the ITC.
Look at that drawing. The NCI is a separate issue, a separate project. And you need to also understand the 8,000 cases we're talking about, that's data that's spread over multiple cooperative groups, majority RTOG. Right. But that issue continues to raise its head. That data is owned by the cooperative group. And so there is a data request form on our ATC website. You can continue to go through that. But the cooperative groups have been pretty consistent that it's somewhat difficult to release that data until they're clear that all primary endpoints have been met. Joe Deasy has been successful, and we've had a few other success stories. So, Virgil, let's go offline with Walter and talk about data sharing more. Let's focus more on the constructs of the Quasar system so we can get to the key points today of the development plan.
Okay. Well, thanks. Those are great questions. We're now, the stats as of September were 77-some complete volumetric digital data sets. This is not submissions. This is complete data sets. So there's multiple attempts at a number of these. But you can see a breakdown here of some of the, at least categories of protocols that have contributed to that. There was a big jump in 2006 as we handled a large phase three partial breast trial that was a joint effort of the NSABP and the RTOG. It tapered off in 2007. We don't have the statistics at my fingertips for 2008, but they probably exceed 2007. We're probably not in a decline, and we're
about the same.
We're about there, and likely we've got some phase threes opening protocols opening up. So we're preparing for at least as much or more an increase for the next year. We've got over 600 institutions able to submit treatment planning data. These are institutions that have actually sent us data protocol compliant data sets that either have gone through credentialing or are actually submitted data to us on protocols. And again, about 11 or so treatment planning vendors, 20 plus or minus, depending on how you slice it, treatment planning system. The QA process it bears a little bit of explanation. Early on, the ITC, or what was the ITC, the RTOG 3D QA Center, as we were called previously, was responsible for essentially all aspects. We received the digital data and did the evaluation of protocol compliance from that. In the last several years, we have divided that in an effort to really focus on strengths. So the ITC is now responsible for the digital data integrity QA, or what we refer to as DDI QA, which involves the evaluation of data received for completeness with respect to protocol elements. We check format of data, spatial registration, dose scaling. We look for possible data corruption and recalculate and do a number of small things to make the job of the next job of protocol compliance QA efficient and uniform. We'll talk a little more of those details. The second step is the responsibility of the cooperative group. And this involves, first of all, checking the target volumes and organs at risk are delineated in a consistent fashion, in a way that can be used to produce comparable dose volume statistics, and then to check the protocol doses, the prescription for coverage of targets and avoidance of normal tissues are met, and to score them in a fashion that's usable for later outcomes analysis. And that step is performed by the protocol study chair. And primarily that's done today using a web-based remote review tool. As we said before, we've supported type 2 data representations, and we've pretty well covered this. We've been involved in the DICOM RT development, and as you're almost certainly aware, we've been working with most of your companies, or all of your companies, with the DICOM export. At this point, we've just reached the tipping point, we think, just past this past year is the first year in which more than half of our submissions are now use .com. We expect that to grow, but it's not going to be a precipitous thing. I think as treatment planning systems with DICOM exports come into clinical use, as they're replaced in upgrades, we expect that number to grow. But it will be, we will still have a few more years of run, I think, on the RTOG data exchange format. But having said that, our goal is to be moving to migrate toward DICOM RT. And you're aware as well that DICOM RT there's development of a second generation of objects, and that's a challenge we will be addressing at the ITC site as well. One of the things that one of the stopgaps, I guess, we have developed. One of the concerns has been in anonymization and in the freedom that institutions have to send us their data, requirements for removing patient identifiers, some treatment planning systems requiring a DICOM receiver, having some difficulty in exporting at the file level. So the DICompiler is a storage service class provider, a series selector, an anonymizer, and a Part 10 DICOM file set creator. Those anonymized file sets can be sent then to us with secure FTP or on media, on CD media. So what is a data integrity QA? What does that encompass? Well, and why do we need to do it? We've looked at data that are sent to us, and we've done several analysis of several years worth of submissions, and found that approximately a quarter of the data sets that are sent to us, it varies with the complexity of the protocol and the type of data, but it's on that order, require some sort of intervention. We have new institutions that are new, or there are new people, there's turnover of individuals. Sometimes not all the required objects are present or interpretable. Sometimes file names are corrupted. Sometimes files are written on top of other files. So there are a number of ways that there can be a problem. There are times when the case or plan or structures are not consistently identified. We get data for the wrong case or the wrong person. So there's some vigilance required to make sure that the data we get are appropriate for the case to be reviewed. And then we consider consistency. Are the spatial registration, we do see occasional issues where images or structures are not correctly spatially registered, where doses are for a single fraction rather than a total fraction group or for a total dose. We have seen, and we've looked at dose volume histograms and seen a variety of inconsistencies between treatment planning systems, different assumptions or different spatial sampling methods that have caused us to do our own DVH calculation, recalculation, so that they are sampled in a consistent way. And then from on the other side of that, we need to make sure that it's not lung minus PTV, or it's consistent whether the the structures are combined in a consistent fashion. If paired organs are there, whether the statistics are comparable from one patient to the next. Another issue is the large number of cases, primarily for IMRT, where contours are used for optimization and used for the treatment planning process, but don't reflect anatomic details or dose dosimetry QA relevant information. So the contours that are used for plan optimization, strictly for plan optimization, can be removed and really are a clutter and cause confusion in the QA process. There are issues of consistent naming of those structures. That's important both for the QA process and for the DVH calculation engines that need to produce consistent dose volume statistics later on. And so this is just one fairly not too atypical example. This is not a record, but here we received a case with 51 structures, and after appropriate paring down, it was ready for review with 24 structure contours, which is much more manageable, much more tractable for the reviewer. We don't throw away the original data. We keep all of the data and archive all of the data sets that are sent to us and can recover them. But for the QA process, it's important that these extraneous contours be moved out of the way. Talked a little bit about uniform structure names. We have a tool, a mechanism for uniformly identifying the structures, for calculating dose volume histograms for those uniformly named structures. For some protocols, there are multiple fraction groups, and we ask that fraction group doses be submitted separately so that we can model correctly or at least with more detail than just the total dose, the individual fraction deliveries for later analysis. And so we've got a tool that we use to sum fraction group doses for the patient prior to DVH calculation. But I don't want to dwell on these, but suffice to say that there are not common, but occasional problems that we find with DICOM implementations. This is one that comes from really an ambiguity in the DICOM standard that was corrected last year. It wasn't expected to cause any problems because that wording really came in terms of images. But the row versus column spacing, whether that meant column pixels in a row or space between rows, was not very clear in the standard. And so wording was added. Turns out we had some issues and some problems in our interpretation of it as well. But it was the inspection of those data sets in the DDIQA process that caught the problem. And actually, a more common issue is one in which that involves patient orientation. Was there a question? Okay. For patient orientation. Much of the data, essentially all of the data on our early protocols were scanned and treated head first supine. As we support protocols in other anatomical sites where best clinical practice would indicate other scan or treatment orientations, we need to start dealing with that. And some treatment planning systems deal with that very well, and others not so well. For our side, the importing process, until we have experience with handling images and structures and doses in multiple orientations, it's difficult to be confident that we have the import code correctly implemented. And so occasionally, as in seen here, we'll get a situation where it's not exported correctly, and we deal with we correspond with the vendors to correct that. But in this case, there was a great need to get this data reviewed quickly. The patient was patient treatment couldn't start, and we were able to amend this data set locally and with great care and extensive comparison to screen captures, we were able to get this particular data set through the QA process. But again, our primary emphasis has been to work with vendors to get their export and our import correct for these patient orientations. The question, I guess, is begged whether we can automate this process. Our tools have made possible a collection of a large volume of data, and we've created a large and useful archive in the process. But there's still a sizable portion of those data sets that require some sort of correction, and we're working to improve our tools, the efficiency of our tools. But it's not yet an automated process. And we don't expect it ever to be a completely automated process. We want to work at the causes of those inconsistencies so that we are less and less a bottleneck in the process. But the emphasis is really on the development of efficient QA, DDI QA tools.
Walter, here's an area that vendors could actually help.
Absolutely.
If, in fact, the data export were made a little bit more intuitive, I think, for dosimetrists to export data for clinical trials specifically.
Right.
We've talked about this over the years, and that anything that can be done on the vendor side that helps data export be complete for a particular protocol, and even eventually naming structures, I think is an area that vendors actually could play a big role in.
Right, and this is an area that I guess Armin and I have had some conversations on, and we need to pursue a little more vigorously in terms of the templates or an effort to inform treatment planning vendor what is required in a structured fashion for an export for a protocol submission. Let's move on to there are no other questions or no other comments. Let me give a quick overview of the remote review tool. This is been in operation for quite a few years now, and has served well to permit a distributed case review with fairly minimal requirements on the client end. It's a fairly intuitive user interface. The intent was to allow very low bandwidth, low latency, not as interactive as a sort of thick client or treatment planning system. It's a click at a time, but it allowed a very easy, low cost entry from the side of the reviewers. And so there's a very large number of PI reviewers that have used the remote review tool. Provides on the left, you can see axial image with, in this case, overlaid isodoses, and on the right you see the dose volume histogram. The process in using this tool is starts out again as a evaluation of contoured structure delineation. There's a slice selector on the left, window level control zoom allows recentering and a selection of which contours are visible. There's a measurement, a Java measurement tool, and a contour editor, and the contours can be copied and edited, and a number of study chairs have used the tool to make amendments in, organ at risk, where say, a femur is contoured, there are slices missing, and contours are added, or there are too many slices contoured and the volume is too large, so that the resulting structure can be made uniform. Once the structures are defined in a uniform fashion, the next step is to review the dose volume statistics, and there's an interactive dose volume histogram display that allows a cursor bar to sample the DVH statistics and a percentage volume and or dose entry. And that can be used to check against the QA criteria. There's also a mechanism that the user can initiate a dose volume histogram recalculation. And there are combinations of structures can be deviations for combinations of structures or newly edited, user-edited contours can be calculated there. The Radiological Physics Center, in their phantom dosimetry work, has used this tool in contouring the TLD volumes on their phantoms and then calculating DVHs to get the statistics for comparison against the measurements for a number of years. Who just joined? Hello? Somebody just joined?
Yeah, this is Damien. I got off my cell phone. I'm at work now.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Welcome back.
Thanks.
Finally, there are, with the evaluation of dose volume statistics comes the question of where the hot spots or cold spots are located, and the isodose. This is an isodose display that's overlaid on a dotted display of the contours. Then. That can indicate, that can help localize where the problems are for the for communication back to the treating physician. A number of years ago, we realized that we would need to handle not just the axial CTs, but that new imaging modalities, in particular PET, was coming in into the trials that we support, and to as a first step in allowing the review of PET, we adopted the use of the CMS focal product, and we're thankful for their help in doing, in CMS's help in doing that. The process here has been that we can import the RT data through our own Quasar CMS file system and move it into Focal, and then import the PET DICOM images and register them, and then compare contours for this particular trial, the 0515, compare the contours, the target volume contours drawn with and without the benefit of PET, and evaluate them with respect to the actual, in this case, qualitative PET data. One of the challenges in more subsequent trials has been in handling quantitative PET, and we're investigating tools for allowing SUV display and comparing those with contours as well. As I mentioned before, we're using the Computational Environment for Radiotherapy Research, or CER, which is something that Joe Deci has developed here at WashU, primarily to begin with, for a data format conversion. We have CER allows both an import of both RTOG and DICOM formats and an export of DICOM. We've used it to a small extent for contour editing. It's come into use for image registration and resampling, and film dosimetry. QA is now the primary tool, or is the basis for the primary tool, I should say, for film dosimetry for the phantom studies at RPC. We've begun to use it in an important way in a cervical cancer study for image plan review. I'll have a picture of that in just a minute, both locally and using WebEx. And so we're encouraged that the remote access to a tool like this will be an important means for multi-planar and multi-series image review and structure review in the context of more than one image set. CER has been adopted importantly by Quark as well, and Dr. Ken Yulin has contributed a number of improvements and customizations to the CER software and has fed those back, and we've incorporated them now in new releases of Serve. So there's a good deal of synergy, and we continue to work with Joe and his colleagues and to make Serve more and more useful for the ATC data integrity as well as protocol compliance review. And here's that RTOG 0418. This is a situation where there are two CT scans, one with full and one with empty bladder, that are used to judge the adequacy of an internal target volume that's defined around the cervix, the cervical target volume in this study. And so we've registered a number of the protocol itself required the contouring on the full bladder scans. The empty bladder scans were submitted and registered, and the co-PIs have reviewed a number of cases in this, and we'll be doing some more at the upcoming RTOG meeting with this tool. So that's basically where we are with the current state of the Quasar system. I want to shift gears now and look at where we need to go, where we know we need to go, and what our strategies are, and sort of outline our strategies in moving forward. We know we need to handle a growing number of new imaging and treatment technologies. Image guidance is important, although it's probably in the short run going to be the purview of the credentialing efforts rather than the case review effort. We've got a number of RTOG studies now that are collecting treatment images. We need to gear up for adaptive radiotherapy and be prepared as there are multiple plans, multiple image series and multiple plans, and there will be new QA workflows. A lot of those are still in discussion and in development, but we know we will need new tools. We will certainly need new tools for new imaging modalities, for target volume delineation, and for response assessment. So those tools will need to support both the collection and data integrity QA as well as the protocol compliance workflows. In making those upgrades and making those changes, however, we will need to maintain continuous support for ongoing protocols. We can't just ditch what we've got and start something brand new. There's a continuity that has to be carried on, and the process of developing new technology is not an instantaneous one. It has to be carried out some experience needs to be gained with new tools and as they're prepared for QA for deployment in QA. And finally, our development budget is somewhat limited, so we have to target and use those funds wisely. The approach that we've taken is to keep changes modular, try to enable stepwise implementation and testing and upgrades, so that we can keep service going for ongoing studies and not have to retest and redevelop an entire system for each new modality or each new process, QA process. We continue to invest in the interfaces. We've been involved and continue to be involved in the DICOM standards process, the IHE Radiation Oncology Initiative, and we continue to support a treatment planning vendor data export. We will, as the new generation of RT objects comes into mainstream use, we hope in the next years, we will be involved in that. Our general philosophy with all of this is then to use as much as we can commercial off-the-shelf and open source software, not invest our limited development budget on tools where those tools already exist, but to focus our custom software development on the efforts that are not otherwise available. or on pilot efforts that show the way and enable us to get to where we can use otherwise available software tools. Again, our current needs are immediate pressing needs, and we're seeing this in a number of protocols that are either open now or about to open, involve review of multiplanar review for treatment plans. A number of studies, the cervical GYN studies, for example, there's a strong need for sagittal, to some extent coronal, but especially sagittal views of targets and doses.
Walter, we should make clear that we need something like thin client on that. I mean, because we have SIR that can do that.
Yes.
Now,
there's a number of ways we can deliver those tools, but this is basically what we need to do. In a moment,
We're not emphasizing the thin client in that slide. No, I want to make sure that's clear to everybody.
Exactly. The other thing that we need in the short run is the ability to review doses and images with respect to other images with spatial registration. So target volume delineation using functional imaging, comparing that to the RT segmentation objects, RT structure set, evaluation of internal target volumes in 4D respiration studies or in situations such as the cervical case that I just indicated, in where there's significant movement due to bladder filling. Those are just examples, but those are the sorts of situations where there are multiple images, multiple series that need to be reviewed do the quality assurance, the protocol compliance quality assurance of those structures. Our strategy is actually multifaceted, and one of those, as Dr. Priti has just mentioned, is to very quickly implement a remote access. Initially, this is going to be a server-side version of SIR, where we want to put this on a server here at ITC. There's a possibility also, depending on partnerships, to use commercial treatment planning systems on our server for protocol case review. The other prong of this effort is an effort to make it easier to move data out of the ITC and review on thick client. In the first case, a grid-enabled, a CA grid-enabled server. This leverages efforts of Dr. Joel Saltz and Ashish Sharma, now at Emory, in developing what they refer to as a virtual PACS under the Cancer Bioinformatics Grid program that will allow, and maybe Joe can give a little bit more detail on that. We've got a slide here in a moment that will tightly integrate a version of the SIR platform with a CA grid-enabled secure transport of those data from data server at ITC.
Come back to that.
Yes, we'll come back to that in just a minute. There's a possibility, and I left the next bullet on the TPS query retrieve. There's a virtual PACS middleware that's also being developed there. That's a little more speculative, but could allow more generic treatment planning system query retrieve at a remote site through this virtual PACS. There are issues with that. Since the data are owned by the cooperative groups, there are issues with security and appropriate access. The virtual PACS can control appropriate access by user, by role-based credentials. But there's the data once, if the full data set once exported, there's concerns about its getting out into the community. So those are challenges, and really we we've done our best to address them, but we really actually throw this back to our industry partners here that really would welcome your input on approaches that might work for us to incorporate more generic or I should say commercial, existing commercial treatment planning systems in a way that, that maintains that security. And Joe can perhaps make some references to that. This is a sort of a high-level view of where we generally would like to get and some of the pieces that as we see taking shape. At the center of this is no longer a treatment planning system, file system, but a DICOM archive. I don't think I have a mouse. In the center, you see DICOM Archive, Evercore. We've implemented, working with Teramedica, have implemented here a DICOM Archive, and are in the process of testing and of developing loading tools for re-identifying, combining re-identifying clinical trials data sets, DICOM, and also non-DICOM data objects in the Evercore archive. What that buys us is access to DICOM tools. You see right below that is the treatment planning system. So a DICOM, we could locally use DICOM capable tools to query and not just treatment planning but image review tools that could be made available through remote access and used locally here at ITC. Moving back to the left for a moment, there are a number of pieces of infrastructure that we've developed based on a treatment planning treatment file system that we will need to re-implement for DICOM. And so data integrity QA tools at the top, our view is to use SIR as this. This is an appropriate use of custom software for functions that are not well implemented in commercial or off the shelf or open source sources. Yeah. And the RTOG DICOM conversion, while RTOG remains an important format for data submission. Back on the right, we're also looking at several review mechanisms that are that involve DICOM. DICOM export becomes a little easier given the DICOM archive, and then SIR export. Yes.
Walter, can I interrupt you for a second here?
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, but those here at CMS are going to have to drop off for a minute and move around. Is this going to be going for a little bit longer?
A few more minutes.
So by the time we get it, might be done.
How long are you going to be off?
A couple minutes.
Probably no, 5 minutes.
We'll
get
be
another
here. Sorry?
Okay. All right. We'll get back on.
Come on back.
All right. Okay. Well, keep on going.
All righty. So there are several mechanisms, as I alluded to before, for distributing SIR-based review. One is the server side, actually running SIR on our remote access server, and then grid SIR data service that would allow query retrieve using the CA grid mechanism with a grid client. A SIR. Grid-enabled SIR client at the user, and Joe will point that out. The last is a web-based treatment plan review, or WebTREB, which we've got another slide in a minute to describe, which is basically a digest of images that are extracted from a SIR data set that we believe will be useful, at least for some protocols, for review of multiple image, multiple planes, and allow fairly simple, efficient reviews of
of simpler protocols.
We'll come back to that.
And we'll come back to that in just a minute.
So I maybe hand it over to Joe.
Well, so let me just say a couple of things about why one would want to put together the CA grid with CERC. One of the driving ideas behind CA grid is essentially, okay, we've got all this data behind firewalls in cancer centers around the country and indeed around the world. People will want to federate this information and access it and do science on it external to these institutions. So there was a strong rationale for developing a system that could securely allow people to that sounds like you're coming in the back door, but to access securely, get authorized access to this data and put it together over the web, and then control, and then have some pretty good control over what happens to the data. And it's an open architecture in the sense that any application that properly exposes a certain amount of metadata that's then registered with the grid system can more or less be run through this. So it's a good match to what we need. What we want to do is we want to have a clinical trials investigator anywhere in the airport or wherever able to securely pull in a clinical trials data set, do plan review, and CERC is this pretty flexible plan review tool. And so what's at least in phase one and what we've already demoed at RSNA a couple of times now is we'll have the user install a compiled version of CER plus the grid client. Then the user will be able to browse and see the data sets for which they are authorized through the browser, pull the data set into the executing image in RAM, do the review. The data only exists in binary in RAM. The data would then go away when the user is finished producing their report and reviewing the information, whatever the clinical group user wants to do. There'll be no ability actually download a data set to a local computer with this system. So that's the rationale. We've already demoed it, and we think it's actually a powerful paradigm. Any comments or questions about that? Okay. And this just is the interface where one launches the grid. There's really not much else to say. Walter, is it okay if I mention this as well?
Absolutely, please.
So one other useful way to digest treatment plan information, and instead of having the user navigate what amounts to a specialized treatment plan and sort of a specialized treatment planning system where you sort of try to pick your way through a data set, is to extract a bunch of images that we think are relevant for the review, put them in a web page, and essentially, so all this data is extracted using CER from a treatment plan that has been sent to a daemon that then turns the treatment plan into CER format. All the extracted information is put into a database. And using Ruby on Rails, then that information is dynamically served up to a web page. And there are two interesting, in addition to the potential efficiency of having a web page interface instead of a sort of an interface where the user tries to navigate around and find the information they want. This system also has a workflow to where a plan is step by step approved, and plans sit in queues, and different individuals then would need to do different tasks as part of the workflow as the plan moves through the workflow. Secondly, I'll just point out that the automation can produce pretty sophisticated reports on whether or not the plan has the correct D98 for this protocol, has the expected V20 on the lung, and so on and so forth. And one can then select the report parameters and see the reports. And I think that's useful for the clinical, certainly for the cooperative group paradigm. Any questions on, and we're in the process of installing this at the ITC right now, so we're well beyond alpha version, and I guess I would call this the running beta version now that we're beginning with at the ITC, and there's interest in installing it at WashU, and we'll probably use it there as well. Any questions about that? Okay.
All right. Well, I just want to give a quick overview of where we are in our as we move forward in our development effort. As I mentioned earlier, we've worked toward the point three here is a DICOM-based archive, Terra Medica. As a precursor to that, we installed some of our IT infrastructure, upgraded some of our IT infrastructure with a storage data backup systems. We've been working with Joe on data conversion tools, and those are pretty much in service. The data service for distributed review is a work in progress, but it has a credible demonstration. We are in the process now. The major effort is in the development of workflow tools for transferring data integrity QA workflow to the new for protocols that use the DICOM archive, and that is in progress. There's migration of existing tools to a new platform. We're looking at some diagnostic imaging review tools, and a couple of those are listed here. We've done some query retrieve tests and some preliminary evaluation of these, and we'll be looking at perhaps some others, but those are the ones we've looked at initially. We are working with Dr. DC and Dr. Saltz on the grid-enabled SIR. We hope to have something early in the coming year to demonstrate and then implement in a production mode that grid-enabled SIR.
Right, so we expect to be showing this at the RTOG meeting in January, some running examples.
Right. And then in parallel with that is an effort to implement some server-side review tools. To begin with, SIR, there are several protocols, as I mentioned, that require sagittal and coronal contour dose review, and those will be the initial efforts, and then the multiplanar review of static images that Joe just mentioned in WebTrip. And finally, as we go down the road, we will be looking at a commercial treatment planning system integration also into the system, and looking for places where it makes sense to use either treatment planning systems at ITC or moving data out to reviewers' treatment planning systems, and that's probably down the road. It's probably beginning this summer we'll start making some taking some preliminary steps in that direction. So I think that's all that I have to present. If there's some other comments or any questions, we'd be glad to respond to those?
We probably went a little long, Walter, and this was our first attempt to try to cut this down in an hour. This clearly is about an hour and a half type effort.
Yeah.
But we wanted to get the ACIP as up to date as we could, and you know, I think we're all open to questions, Joe, myself, or Walter, as y'all go along. We just really want to emphasize to try to get some preliminary report, at least, as Joel Goldwine said on the phone. But we do need some input before our January 15th meeting. We would greatly appreciate, you know, the ACIP helping us in this effort and meet that deadline.
Who do we still have on the phone?
We're going to have it.
Okay.
All right,
good.
Yes, Damien's still here. Yes, CMS is still here.
Oh, okay. All right.
Thanks.
Y'all were so quiet.
We left.
I was wondering.
In 5 minutes. We hurried.
You did. You did very well.
I'm surprised Virgil's on the phone. I thought we would have heard from him, but anyway.
No, come on, Joe. Be nice.
Well, you've got the written document that we put together, so you've got that, plus we could put this set of slides up on.
We'll find a way to do that.
We'll
distribute a password protected version of the slides and the audio file, and if we'll distribute that around to the
ACIP.
Okay.
Okay.
And don't hesitate to ask us questions or
sure. Anybody would like any more follow up on the things we're involved in, I'm sure you can email either myself or Walter or Jim or all three of us, and we'll be happy to clarify.
Could I ask the ITC folks and Jim to stay on the phone, and the three parties of us can talk about next week's meeting?
Yeah.
That'd be good. All right?
Sure.
Okay.
Thanks. This is very informative. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for attending.
Thank you all.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye.
All right, Jim, so
yeah,
I'm going to go ahead and turn off the audio here.
Yep.
Okay.
Let me see.
All right, stop.